Dad's on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on fatherhood and masculinity topics. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Stan Carosi. Stan is a counsellor and psychotherapist. He's the founding director of Parental Alienation Australia and New Zealand, and he is a director of his own company, Dialogue in Growth. Now, Stan has recently presented a paper at the Australian Psychological Society Counselling Psychologist Conference. That was just last month in February. And at this conference, his paper was dealing with topics related to parental alienation and the interventions that become necessary when parental alienation occurs. So, Stan Carosi, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
So, Stan, perhaps if we start, there seems to be very little understanding in the community at large as to what parental alienation is. Perhaps you could tell us what it is and why you think it's a bad thing.
Look, in its most simplest form, parental alienation occurs when one parent deliberately interrupts or ruptures a relationship between a child and a parent whom that child loves. So the key thing here is that the relationship is damaged or ruptured and that one of the parents has been instrumental in causing it. And in this respect, parental alienation differs from all other forms of parent-child ruptures or relationship difficulties. So just to clarify there, parents and children will have difficulties in their relationship for a number of reasons, particularly in the context of divorce and separation. But only one of those reasons is parental alienation, and that's the hostile intent or the malicious intent by one parent to destroy a loving relationship between a child and the other parent.
Yes, you mentioned that hostility. We often hear about high conflict separations, high conflict divorces. How does parental alienation fit in with the high conflict?
High conflict and parental alienation often conflated or confused with each other. There's a big difference. Children will react to parental conflict in a divorce and separation situation. It's very distressing for them, even abusive and harmful to them. But they still retain the capacity to love both parents. And they still have that necessary ambivalence towards both parents, even when they don't like one of the parents, for example. Parental alienation differs from high conflict situations in that a child develops an unreasonable, harsh, irrational hatred for a parent whom they formerly loved and refuse often to have anything further to do with them. And once again, the clear distinction is in high conflict, you've got two parents fighting each other and frankly, they've forgotten about the kids. In parental alienation, you have one parent who has often manufactured conflict for the purpose of rupturing that relationship between the child and a beloved parent. Many professionals confuse the two.
They often go together, do they?
They often seem together because in a parental alienation context, the smokescreen is high conflict. So often the alienated parent or the rejected parent, or sometimes we call them the target parent, is literally forced to fight for their children. So then they look like they are causing the conflict because they're the ones initiating applications in court. They're the ones trying to contact their children. They're the ones trying to contact their ex-partner. So they look like the active agent in the conflict, okay? But in actual fact, the conflict has been manufactured by the other parent and often very simply by refusing to get the child to a designated contact or not allowing the child to contact the other parent. Well, any number of means are available to them quite passively to interrupt the normal flow of a loving relationship.
Yes, and sometimes there's a suggestion that the children themselves are alienating themselves from the parent. Is that something that also needs to be investigated?
I'm going going to be semantically correct here because this is one of the confusions that occurs. To put it simply, children don't alienate themselves. Okay? Children can align themselves with one parent against the other whilst maintaining a kind of ambivalence with both parents. Okay? You know, the classic case is, well, I hate you, Mum or Dad, because you've destroyed our family. What they're really saying is they're angry and they're hurt, but they still love both parents. When we talk about a child alienating themselves, they don't do that because alienation is actually a process created by a favoured parent. So the child finds themselves in an enmeshed, emotionally dependent, conditional relationship with a favoured or alienating parent, and that parent actually alienates the child, and they do it through a variety of techniques that principally change the nature of the loving relationship that child had with the rejected parent. Very simple things like monitoring telephone calls, intercepting mail, denigrating the other parent to the child. You know, very simple things.
Well, look, I'm glad you're able to sort out a few things for us, because another term that's often bandied about and is instantly attacked is parental alienation syndrome. Now, is that something different from parental alienation, just those two words on their own?
There is a technical difference between the two. The big difference is that parental alienation syndrome is an attempt to diagnose parental alienation by looking at the children's manifestations of certain behaviours, things like the harsh and unreasonable rejection, you know, the parroting of the favoured parent's issues about the other parent, what's called the independent thinker phenomena, where they firmly believe that something has happened, that they witnessed it, when in fact it never did. There are about eight criteria that were originally developed by Richard Gardner in 1985, and they've remained unchanged for about 30 years. But the thing is that parental alienation syndrome is not in any of the diagnostic manuals or publications that are used by psychologists or psychiatrists. So if you go and speak to someone and say, my child's got parental alienation syndrome, or they are a victim of parental alienation syndrome, a standard response will be, there is no such thing.
Mm.
Okay? And technically that is correct. If you go and speak to those same professionals and say, I'm concerned that my child may be alienated from me, in other words, they have suffered or are in a parental alienation situation, you may get the question, well, what do you mean? Can you tell me what's going on? And so there's a better acceptance of parental alienation as a presentation of an abusive and dysfunctional family system versus parental alienation syndrome, which is an attempt to diagnose it in the child. And that's a controversial notion. Even within the parental alienation community, there is controversy over whether parental alienation can be diagnosed solely in the child or whether it needs to be assessed in the context of the child's behaviour as well as the parent's behaviour.
Yes, you just mentioned a few things to look for. What should a parent look for if they suspect there's parental alienation happening? They might be inclined to just regard themselves as having done the wrong thing and might be a temporary thing, but there must be something that would influence that person to know that, no, this is something more serious, this is actual parental alienation.
Look, one of the clear signs is when a loving relationship you've had with your child suddenly changes. And I mean suddenly, it can be very fast indeed, literally within hours, 24 hours, you know. So one minute they love you, next minute they won't talk to you. The other thing to look for is when a child comes to you with certain concepts and ideas that are kind of beyond their age and stage. You know, a classic case was an eight-year-old boy who came home and accused his father of not paying child support. Well, where did he get that idea from?
Mm.
You know, and how would a child of 8 years old understand, you know, child support? You know, it's a complex concept beyond many adults. So there are a few signs to look for. You also look at what the other parent is doing. For example, if you're trying to contact your child and you can't get through, mobile phones are confiscated for trumped-up reasons like, oh, well, they've abused them, so they're on stoppage. Funny how that becomes, you know, without a time frame. Things like your mail not getting through, email not getting through. Also, a big one is when children start reacting disproportionately to relatively minor issues. So you might have disciplined your child quite lightly about watching too much TV or isn't it time for you to do your homework or something like that, and that suddenly gets exploded into, oh, you yelled at me or you threw something at me or you made me feel awful. So there's a disproportionate response to what would otherwise be a normal interaction. That's also one of the danger signs.
Yes, all very distressing for the parent, I'm sure. We're just going to take a short break now, and we'll be back in a minute. We'll be speaking again with Stan Carosi, a counsellor and psychotherapist, on this very important issue of parental alienation.
Sliding away, you know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man, he came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She said, a good day ain't got no rain. She said, a bad day's when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a father who had a son. He longed to tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. He kissed his boy as he lay sleeping, then he turned around and headed home again. His slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
That was Paul Simon singing Slip Sliding Away. I know Paul Simon has been through a marriage separation. And welcome back to Dad's on the Air. We're speaking today to Stan Carosi, a counsellor and psychotherapist, about issues relating to parental alienation. Now, Stan, you were just talking about some of the things to look for with parental alienation, and all of them would sound very distressing. Is it a standard sort of behaviour? Do you find that within these cases that all those things you mentioned are present, or is it only perhaps one or two of them that you might see?
Look, you never get a textbook case, obviously. So, you know, every situation I work with, and I work mainly with parents who have been rejected or are in the process of having their relationship threatened with their children, you know, we get a combination of things. We never just get one, but we never get all of them. you know, one or more of them are more important, more significant than the other. Last thing I mentioned was the disproportionate, unrealistic, unreasonable reaction to minor things. That can be exploded out into a false allegation of abuse. It can be quite serious because children are believed when they say that. So the very common things I come across, in fact, probably the most single most common thing is what I call contact interference. So often the way this plays out is your child comes to visit you or comes to spend time with you on a shared care basis, and their mobile phone just does not stop ringing. Mm-hmm. And it's the other parent ringing all the time when the child's with you. And that prevents the child from enjoying an uninterrupted, loving relationship with you. Mm-hmm. Other things that are really, that I come across very often is the creation of a climate of fear in the child that is not based on any real thing that the parent has done to create that. In other words, no abuse, no, you know, frightening actions. So, you know, the parent either acts in a certain manner in relation to the rejected parent or talks to the child in a certain manner that the child then forms the view that the parent whom they are rejecting is unsafe.
And this is sometimes even promoted at schools, isn't it? You might hear the teacher say that one of the parents, the emphasis being on safety when they're with the other parent, which automatically gets the child's concerns up.
That's right. In our incredibly safety conscious world, and we have a hair trigger with respect to safety and family violence for obvious reasons, you know, there are some presumptions about who is a safe parent and who isn't. And it doesn't take much to trigger in the child that latent fear that they're not safe. They're already feeling terribly insecure because the family they have come to know has shattered. And they're already feeling helpless and vulnerable, not knowing who to turn to. And the parent whom they have loved is then being set up as being somehow fearful.
How common is this parental alienation, Stan? Is it something that's a significant proportion? Is it increasing or is it decreasing?
Look, the last known figures we had were from the Australian Institute of Family Studies, and they were researched by, I think, a Professor Nick Bala from Canada. So at that time, which is back in 2010, 2012, it was on the rise. And the 2010 figures were doubled over the 2009 figures. It's a growing problem because the way our family law system is set up is that it encourages or it allows parents to exploit it by excluding a parent from a child, creating the climate of fear on the basis of either false allegations or something that's plausible but unsubstantiated. And our system is designed to be self-triggering on safety concerns.
It sounds like the system is doing exactly the opposite of what should be done. Your topic was actually about intervention. So what would you recommend that should be done in these situations?
Look, basically when a child is exhibiting resistance to contact, let's start out with resistance, okay? If a child is exhibiting resistance to contact with a parent whom they have loved, then rather than allowing the child to simply act on that resistance needs to be investigated with the child. And so that this is a change of tack from conventional counselling, which the danger there is that it tends to reinforce one's own perception of reality without regard to how that reality is formed. So then you need to sort of question and challenge the child about where did these ideas come from, that mum or dad is scary, or what's making you not want to spend time with them. And when you be a little bit more forensic and challenging about that, that's when you allow the child to express the fact that they probably do love both parents, but something is getting in the way of them spending time or being in contact with the other parent. So the intervention has got to be organised around the child and the parent whom they are rejecting. And in the current context, what happens is that a child says, I don't want to be with the other parent because they're bad, they're nasty, or they're abusive. And our system tends to say, okay. Family consultants who write family reports and assess these situations, if I can say the one biggest area they need to improve in is being prepared to challenge a child's perceptions of a rejected parent and their perception of a favoured parent. If you don't challenge it, then you just believe it. And we know that children are very suggestible at certain ages and inclined to, you know, not understand and not appreciate how memory can fail, how things can be suggested to them. So a simple example is that, you know, it's not uncommon a child will allege that they witnessed family violence, that they were subjected to it. If you ask them about it, if you ask them what did they see, what did they hear, what were people wearing, what room in the house it was in, often they can't answer that question, but they can definitely assert that they saw it. Well, most people who are exposed to that sort of thing can give you some details about what they saw, okay?
Yes.
So there's an example where that kind of questioning needs to be done.
If there isn't the intervention, what are the long-term effects for the children?
Look, the research has shown that for a child to reject a parent whom they have loved and to be made to reject them by an alienating parent is at least as harmful as child sexual abuse in the long run. So in the long run, both parental alienation and child sexual abuse exposes children to enhanced risks of long-term depression, self-harm, self-destructive behaviours, chronic issues in terms of how they relate to people. Think about this. If you're in a conflict situation, and I'm sure that you would have been in those situations yourself, Bill, you know, we tend to try and resolve conflict. We don't just automatically cut off the person whom we disagree with. If we all did that, our workplaces would be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens with children is that they learn that what they can do about dealing with difficult emotions and difficult conflictual situations is they just cut off someone. And that's not the way our society works. So their way of dealing with the awful pain of a separation and divorce is to cut off a parent whom they love. Well, then they translate that into their adult lives. That's one example. And there's also lots of problems with feelings of guilt and responsibility. Often children who are alienated and enmeshed in an alienating relationship with a favoured parent, they become responsible for how that parent feels. They often care for a parent who's made themselves deliberately vulnerable so the child cares for them. These are all very harmful, emotionally manipulative processes that children don't learn in adult life how to avoid. So then they end up having those same types of relationships.
It being so serious, action has been taken in other parts of the world. We interviewed Judge Perez from Brazil some years ago. But look, we've run out of time, unfortunately, Stan. I wonder if you could perhaps we could finish up by you telling us a song you've selected for us and perhaps why you picked it.
Okay, now that was a Tom Petty song, and I think it's called I Won't Back Down.
Well, that's what I think we're looking for, I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty.
And I chose that song because in my darkest moments when I was dealing with my own child being alienated from me, I played that song to myself. I heard it on the radio and my heart just soared and I haven't backed down since.
I can vouch for that. Look, Stan is a real warrior out there doing wonderful work for the parents and children affected by this dreadful parental alienation. So, Stan, can I thank you for being on the show? We're going to go out now with I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty.
Thank you, Bill.
Turned around.
And that was I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. Our guest today was Stan Carosi. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email telling us where you heard the show, and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. In the meantime, it's goodbye from Dads on the Air.